Welcome everybody to Live from My Drum Room, and it's an absolute pleasure and an honor to welcome my guest today, who's a very dear friend and one of my absolute favorite drummers on the planet, and fabulous musician and human being, the great Ricky Fitar is with me today.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, Ricky. It's great to see you.
We're streaming, are we?
We're streaming. Okay. We're streaming at the top of our lungs.
There you go.
I have to tell you before I forget that Stanley Sheldon is watching, and he wanted me to tell you that he's watching.
Oh, my goodness. In Ohio. Stanley.
Yes. Good old Stanley, huh?
Yeah.
Man. And, okay, so there's a few people watching, and I'm not going to get thrown off track here, but I have to make mention. Okay. Our dear friend Eddie Tadouri is also watching.
Oh my goodness!
And I will say hi. Yeah, you're saying hi right now.
Okay, perfect. Okay, he can hear, but he can't respond.
He can see, and he can type something. And I got to tell you, you know, I'm just about done with Eddie's book. I don't know if you've read his book, but it's fantastic. It's a digital book, and I'll send you the link for it.
Well, that'll be great. I'd love to read it.
Yeah, and there's a whole chapter about him playing with the Beach Boys and with you, and some in typical Eddie fashion. There's some hilarious moments where he, you know, it's Eddie telling the story, so it's really funny at times.
Okay. Just,
yeah, most of the time.
All right. That'd be great.
Anyway, welcome, Ricky. It's great to see you.
Good to be here. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Let's jump in. So, I have so many questions. I've known you for so long, and I probably never got around to asking you some of the questions or some of the things that we'll talk about today. And I guess my first question would be, how old were you when you started playing drums? And that's one of those questions I hate asking people because they probably get asked all the time, but I'm very curious to know.
Well, I started playing when I was 9 years old. My brothers had a little group, and, you know, they had a drummer, and they all worked during the day. They had day jobs. And then I guess at a certain point, the drummer kind of got fed up with, you know, working all day, then like playing all night. And my brothers were like over the top enthusiastic. So the drummer stopped turning up. So they just taught me the basics, you know. And so I just started playing with them at age 9. And then, you know, by age 10, we were like doing gigs. So it's like forever ago.
Yeah.
6 years on. Yeah.
And this was this the beginning of the Flames, or was it already the Flames at that point? And
it wasn't really the Flames at that point. It was just the Fitar brothers, you know.
Fitar brothers, yeah.
But at some point, somebody came up with the name The Flames.
I see.
Which was very unoriginal.
It's a great name, though.
It was a name, yeah.
For the 60s, it's perfect, too, you know? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Because, you know, we were talking earlier before we were on the air about those old records, and just by doing the math, I mean, you were so young playing in that band. I mean, like 15 or something, 14, 15?
Yeah, I mean, well, as I say, I started playing when I was 9, and then we started playing locally when I was 10, and I think I was 12 when we made our first record up in Johannesburg. And so it was like, at that point, we were just like, you know, playing all over the country, driving around like fools, but having a great old time, you know.
I'll bet. Yeah. And your two brothers were older. You were the younger. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. My oldest brother was, I think, 10 years older. And then my second oldest brother was 7 years older than me.
Yeah. Oh, quite a bit younger then. Yeah. So they must have been like great, you know, mentors too, as well, you know, just in terms of like taking you under their wing, so to speak.
Absolutely. It was great to have two older brothers to kind of, you know, show you the ropes, so to speak. And also just to get turned on to a whole lot of, you know, music, you know. So it was, you know, great to have, just great to have them be my mentors.
Yeah. What were you listening to as far as, I'm guessing at that young age, you were probably more influenced by maybe your brothers, like what the music they were playing versus like a drummer from that.
Yeah, they were listening to, you know, Elvis Presley, the Everly Brothers, all of that kind of stuff. And that's the stuff we were playing. And also like surf music, like the Ventures and, you know, the Shadows, a band out of England. We were, you know, like learning all those kind of tunes.
Yeah.
Playing them at the local community center and that sort of thing, at dances. But, you know, after I started playing for a little while, I mean, I got way into the whole jazz thing in the 60s and the Impulse Records and Blue Note Records. And, yeah, I was, you know, crazy about Alvin Jones.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard that. I was just a goner, you know.
Yeah, so, yeah, that, and that makes sense.
I liked all the, I mean, I love, you know, I liked all the other stuff also, but the stuff that I was totally crazy about was all the jazz music coming out in the early 60s. Yeah.
Yeah. And you never took lessons. You were self-taught pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, I would have if there was anybody around, but there wasn't really. I mean, you know, I learned stuff from seeing other drummers playing around. And we didn't have YouTube, and so I just would learn stuff off the records and try and emulate that as best I could, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there wasn't anybody was teaching, so never got to do that.
Did you, I mean, when you're young like that too, I'm guessing you weren't thinking about like feel and things like that are, you know, we know now. It's so important, and it's just, to me, you have such a natural feel. Just, it's just incredible.
Well, I mean, you know, obviously I try to emulate the records, like the Stax records and all that kind of stuff. And then we played a lot, and I mean, we played a lot of dances, and you can tell when people were really dancing, it was when you were in the pocket, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think a lot of feel comes from actually seeing how people respond and you know, knowing, just playing a lot, I think.
Sure, yeah. But I wouldn't you say, too, though, that there's something about, you know, just having a natural, just having a naturally good feel. I think you're one of those guys that, like Ringo or talking about Jeff Beccaro earlier, you know, like just have this incredible, and it's interesting you say the Stax records. Two things. I almost wore my Stax t-shirt today. But listening to like some of the stuff you did with Bonnie, I hear like some Al Jackson influences at times.
Oh, totally.
I mean,
that crazy for him. I mean, we played a lot of soul music, Otis Redding stuff, just anything that we liked, we just learned it and played it, you know, it was just like that.
Yeah.
Al Jackson was so great, and, you know, it's still so great to hear that stuff.
It sure is. I'll just skip ahead. There's a part in Not the Only One, the Bonnie Raitt song, Not the Only One, where you're going into the B section. I'm really ahead. This was going to be, I made a note to talk about this later, but since we're talking about Al Jackson and listening to it recently, the part where you go into the B section of the verse, where you're playing like a tom-tom hit with the snare. I can play it for you if you want.
Sure. I mean, to jog my memory. Yeah, absolutely.
It reminds me of Al Jackson, and just recently it really sort of resonated with me that I thought, you know, I'll bet he was, I mean, he would have had to have been, and if he's an influence on all of us of a certain, you know, age and generation. So, let me play the tune real quick. And we don't have to listen to the whole song, although I can listen to the song 100 times. Everybody watching at home, this is Not the Only One, Bonnie Raitt, Luck of the Draw record.
Feeling that I'd always be
Okay, this part coming up here, Ricky. Is that like a little tom-tom hit you're doing there?
Yeah, I think I was playing the tom, and I think we might have exaggerated by overdubbing it again.
I see. So
make it a little broader.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. We'll play a little bit more.
Beautiful.
What a song, Ricky, man.
Yeah. I just realized at the beginning, I think that was the pure Motown feel, wasn't that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It was. Nothing wrong with that, though.
No, nothing wrong with that at all.
I have to tell you, Joe Vitale, also one of my heroes and good friends, is watching. Yeah. Boy, who doesn't love Joe?
Yeah.
He says, Ricky, Soulful Cat, the best.
Oh, nice. Joe's a
returning champion on my show. He's been on many times, and he'll be back too.
Oh my God.
I hear, like, as we were just talking about Al Jackson and those, but in, you know, not obviously in a copying way, but just as an influence, to just sort of an homage to him.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. The spacing.
With Bonnie's records, I mean, especially in those early records, it was just, you know, we'd hear the tune and the demo of it on a boombox in the studio, and then just go out and play it. And she, I mean, as long as it was a good vocal take, that was it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that could be like the first take or like take two or three. It was never like this. I mean, of course, we'd run through it before we started taking, but right. It was usually like within the first couple of takes we had it.
Wow.
So there's a lot of songs where I go, damn, I wish we had another shot at that one.
Well, I've seen you a number of times, and I feel like you're one of these guys you're so humble. I remember one of the more recent times at Fenway Park, you said to me afterward, he said, well, it was an incredible show. It was, you guys were with James Taylor. This might have been about 5 years ago.
I remember.
You remember that? And you said something like, well, I don't know, it wasn't wasn't my best performance, or something like that. I'm like, oh my God. Like, you know, I understand that too. I know we all have, we feel differently about things at times, but anyway, that was perfection to me, that take.
Oh, so. Great. I mean, sometimes it's just the way you're hearing things, but, you know, obviously you get so tuned in using in ears that if something's off, it kind of makes you feel off. So it's hard to judge sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you're not in the audience. So anyhow,
I have to say too, on that song and just in general, Hutch, James Hutchinson, longtime bass player, your rhythm partner in Bonnie's band. God, what a just yeah. another, yeah, just a
It's monster. A good lock on that one. And Richard Thompson's guitar stuff on that is just great.
Yeah, beautiful. And our friend Deborah Dobkin, who is playing percussion on that track as well. And so now when you, so you mentioned Bonnie's vocal, when you cut that track, was it pretty much live? Was Bonnie singing live?
Yeah. I mean, that's what they really, you know, Don was the producer was, they, that's basically what they were going for, was a good vocal take.
Wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, there might be a screw up on the guitar. They just fix that, whatever.
Right.
But it's pretty much like live in the studio. And, you know, she goes through it. So, I mean, I that vocal is probably the whole thing is just, that's it, you know?
Yeah. Beautiful vocal performance.
Right. Just singer,
spectacular. And I was going to ask you if Deborah and you tracked that together, you know, live.
I think she overdubbed on that.
Okay.
I can't say for sure, but I think she overdubbed percussion. Yeah. On that.
Yeah. I know it was quite a while ago, but,
yeah,
beautiful. Beautiful.
That would be a question for her. She'd remember, I'm sure.
Okay. All right.
I don't remember the percussion being set up. No, I don't remember her being there for the track.
Yeah. Okay. I know we skipped ahead quite a bit, but we were talking about the Flames and that, and those years, with your brothers and Blondie led to a connection with the Beach Boys, right? If I understand the story that
right.
Al Jardine and Carl Wilson saw you and.
Right. I mean, basically what had happened is we'd gotten as far as we could in South Africa and we decided, okay, let's try our luck and go to London. And we went there and struggled and just, played in little clubs. And, you know, we were playing in clubs like the Revolution, the Blazers was another club. And it was amazing because, you know, we'd be playing at the Revolution and Brian Jones came in and he was having a grand old time and dancing around. And he was like offering us a record deal on the Rolling Stones label and all of this stuff. And we were going, wow, but that never really happened. Al Jardine came in to this club called the Blazers and heard us playing but then came back the next night with Carl Wilson. And then we had a conversation and Carl was just totally flipped about the band. And then it wasn't much longer before, I think 3 months later, we moved to Los Angeles. That was just never part of the plan, but that's how it unfolded.
And so you and Blondie left the Flames, or did they just sort of disband at that point? Or
no, we all, my brothers, all,
oh,
my
you did.
Three brothers and Blondie, we all moved to Los Angeles and, we lived in a big old house and we made a record for the Beach Boys label, which is Brother Records.
Right, right. Okay. Yep. That's right. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And, at a certain point, that got a little too wild and crazy for me, and so I actually left the band. They made a second record for Brother Records, and I sort of ended up moving on to other things. But basically, I needed a gig because I was like out of a gig, and so I asked Carl if I could play percussion with the Beach Boys. So, and which I did. I mean, I was like playing, tambourines and congas and whatever, And then I can't remember how long I was doing that for, but at a certain point, Dennis had this accident where he put his hand through a glass window, a glass door or something. I think he was, having a wild night. And I was there. And so I just ended up playing the drums. It was like the simple answer.
Yeah, yeah.
At a certain point down the line, their manager asked if both Blondie and I would like to join the band. So we said, heck yeah, what the hell, you know?
Yeah. That was an interesting period too. You made, I'm going to play a song from that period. If that's, we'll play a couple seconds of that, but,
sure.
Yeah. And I saw the Beach Boys in 74 at the Boston Garden, but I think I think
at that point I might've been gone. I think I left at 73. I think.
Okay. Yeah. I think Dennis was back by then.
Okay.
I recall him being there, you know, in his left-hand lead.
Right.
The way he played. And it was 50 years ago almost, but.
Yeah. And I think at that point they were, you know, had gotten into using two drummers a lot. Because when I was with the Beach Boys, I played, you know, sometimes I played guitar, sometimes I played piano. And then, you know, there would be some other drummer, probably Eddie.
Yeah.
At a certain point. Bobby Figueroa was another drummer, where we had two sets of drums. Mm-hmm. I mean, Dennis, during the period I was there, Dennis hardly played. He just wanted to kind of waltz around and play a bit of piano, sing a few songs, you know, go off stage, have a drink, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At what point did you start playing guitar, or, you know, start playing other instruments, or had you from the beginning been playing guitar and piano?
Well, yeah, from the beginning, my brothers were teaching me, you know, bass and guitar. So, I mean, we'd all, you know, we just sit around and play guitars and sing songs together and that sort of thing. And then later on, just being around other musicians, I started learning piano from them. And I'm still doing that to this day. You know, from great people like John Cleary. You know, I'm happy to learn stuff from him. He's just an amazing piano player.
Yeah. Do you play more when you're at home now off the road? You probably, I'm guessing, play more piano than drums.
Absolutely. I mean, I play guitar and I play piano because for me, it's not really fun playing drums by myself. I like to play drums if there's other musicians playing. I'm playing along with them, you know.
Yeah.
But I mean, I do play at home every now and then. I have to warm up before a tour, so I play along with James Brown or whatever, you know.
That's great. So you do that. So you don't actually play to maybe recordings that you've done yourself, but to just favorite songs.
No, I'd rather play with other people who, you know, that I look up to. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. Oh man. So
you know, the thing is, on your own, I don't know if this is true for all drummers, but I mean, when I listen to my stuff, God, I wish I'd done that differently. Oh, I wish, you know, I don't know if there's actually a perfect take, you know?
Yeah. But, yeah. No, I know what you're saying. I know there's that tendency to be critical of yourself and
you're listening. I mean, I'm listening to the drums going, oh, you know, not just listening to the song and the record, you know. So yeah, when I'm at home by myself, I prefer to play along with James Brown. Is always fun, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Clyde and Jabbo. I mean, you know, they'll put you through your paces too. Those guys.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
The Holy Grail.
So just to jump back to the Flames, I think I have that song. I was going to play See the Light, just a couple of minutes of it. And then
the record that we made for the Beach Boys label. Yeah.
Great, 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 great. Okay. This is called See the Light.
Time.
Man, incredible vocals. Four-part harmonies?
Yeah, well, you know, we all stuck together for years, so it was kind of nice. Wow. Yeah, Blondie Chaplin singing on that is pretty amazing.
What, you know, yeah.
Sounds kind of Beatlish now when I listen back to it. It's kind of a mix of this and that.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a little Beatly feel, but it's beautiful. And your swing is ever present, you know, that I'm, you know, like that I got to know later in later years, but it's there way back then. Yeah.
Yeah. That was done in Brian Wilson's at Brian Wilson's house. He had a recording studio in his house. So we did that whole record in his house.
Yeah.
And, beautiful. You know, that's when Brian was pretty much at home and, you know, would see him every now and then wandering around in his bathrobe. But
did he produce it too? Or did you guys produce
Carl
it?
Carl Wilson was the producer.
Oh, Carl. So, yeah.
Yeah. Work with Paul. Yeah.
Great. And then, so at some point, so just looking at the sort of trajectory of, that was the early mid 70s.
It was right at the beginning of 71, I think. Okay. I think we arrived right at the end of 1970.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, I think I was in the Beach Boys at the end of 71 or something like that.
Got it. Okay.
Something like that. I mean, I'd really have to go back and look and see the exact dates.
It's probably
in the
archive somewhere. Yeah. So how did it, you know, it's a pretty fascinating thing to see you, you know, like you were in the Ruddles, movie and band it was in the later 70s. And
yeah,
was there some connection? Was there a Beach Boys connection to that somehow? Or was that just,
no, that was the really kind of happenstance. I mean, it was just an odd thing. and because I went with a friend of mine to Barbados, he was buying a house there. And so he said, come along. You know, I'd never been to Barbados. So I said, sure. And then, you know, I went down there for a week. And one day I was like sitting on the beach, like, you know, I brought my guitar with me. So I was sitting on the beach playing a guitar. And this guy comes along and it turns out to be Eric Idle.
I knew you were going to say that.
and he goes, hey, you know, when I bring my guitar, we can, you know, hang out and play together. I said, sure, you know. So, and that's how he and I became friends. And that's so we'd sit around and sing. I mean, he knew like all the old Everly Brothers and Elvis Presley songs, Beatles songs. So we would just sit around and sing these songs on the beach. And, you know, we just became fast friends. And then, you know, I don't know, it was like 6 months later, he said, oh, do you want to be in this thing I'm making called The Ruddles? I go, you know, I can't really act or, you know, any of this stuff. So he said, oh, you don't have to do anything. You'll just be mic miming. And so I went along with it. And little did I know that, you know, they had a drummer. So I thought I was going to be playing drums. But instead, when I turned up, I ended up playing the bass, then miming the guitar as George Harrison for the movie. It was an odd, the whole thing was odd. So I was just kind of like thrown into that. And, you know, I had stage fright for sure. And also being around all these people, you know, there were, I mean, all the Pythons and, you know, Megger was around, and George Harrison, you know, put up money for it, and he was around. So it was great, you know, hanging around with all these people. But it was like, I was a bit starstruck, I have to say.
I don't blame you. You answered the question I was going to ask, which is, was it at the time when, was Python still, were they still making episodes? Like that was still happening, or like you knew who Eric was when you saw him? And
well, I mean, I've pretty much got to know Eric very quickly because, you know, the reason he was in Barbados was that he was helping write some sketches for Paul Simon, who was also in Barbados for Saturday Night Live. So that's how Eric happened to be in Barbados. So that, when I say it was happenstance, it was purely coincidental that he was just walking down the beach and I was sitting there playing guitar, looking at the sunset, you know. And then I, you know, Monty Python figured large in everything. And
yeah,
you know,
that's wow. I've always wanted to ask you about that because I wondered if maybe that you might have got bitten by the bug to maybe pursue acting from that, but maybe it was
not at all.
Of a one-off. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Total, yeah. I mean, I just kind of walked in and walked out of that, you know.
But what a fun thing to have in your, you know, in your resume, so to speak.
It's a very oddball thing, but you know, I didn't have to say anything because, you know, I said to Eric, you know, I'm not an actor. And he said, I have to say, you'll be the silent one. So,
okay. Yeah.
Perfect.
I haven't seen it in a while, Ricky. I'm going to have to watch it again. I don't know why I thought you had some lines in it, but I'll have to go back and
I don't think I have a single line in it. No.
That's okay, though. Yeah. Safer.
It's perfect for me because, you know, I mean, I played, you know, sitar and bass and some guitar on it, but and some percussion, sang on it, and then mime guitar in the actual movie of it.
Yeah.
So wow. It was a lot of fun. You know, meeting Neil Ennis was great. I mean, he was a fantastic guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So then it, by my record, I mean, you started playing with Bonnie in the late 70s or early 80s, like probably not long after that.
Right. I played on a record of hers called Green Light, because I was living in Zuma Beach at the studio called Shangri-La Studios, which was owned by the band at that point. Mm-hmm. It's where they filmed a lot of stuff for The Last Waltz. Was, you know, they filmed a lot of this, you know, the interviews with the band and so on there. But anyways, it was a nice recording studio there. Made a bunch of records there with the Australian singer Renee Geyer and with Ian McLagan. And
sure.
I can't remember who else. But anyhow, Bonnie heard the Renee Geyer record and she flipped out for that and she wanted to use that band, which is called, we call ourselves the Bump Band. Which is Ian McLagan, myself, Johnny Lee Shell, and Ray O'Hara, a Japanese bass player. That was the Bump Band. And okay. Yes, so I met Bonnie in, that was 1979. We made the Green Light record then.
Wow.
But I didn't really work with her until much, much later. In, I think we recorded... Nick of Time in 1988 or 87. I can't remember which. She rang me up. I was in New York. And she said, I finally got myself a record deal. You know, nobody wanted to sign her for years.
Yeah.
And she got herself a good record deal and said, asked me if I would, you know, come out and play on it. And that was Nick of Time.
Boy, what a record.
Yeah, and then, you know, a year later, she called me up. I was in Australia. She said, oh, that record won all the Grammys. That was the thing. I was woken up by a friend of mine in Australia. Hey, that, you know, that chick singer, you record you played on won all the Grammys, you know. Oh, God, you're pulling my leg. But I was amazed to read in the newspaper about it. So I called her up. So then she was shell-shocked. Having won all those Grammys, you know, kudos to her.
Absolutely. I remember watching that show, that Grammy show, and you know, she was, gosh, I mean, talk about someone, you use the term pay your dues, but, you know, like you said, and knowing the backstory of like her not really, not getting a record deal, nobody wanted to sign her, then Capitol signed her, and that record just exploded. It was just such a great record, and...
it was so great. I mean, great for her. Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we play a song from that record?
Sure. Whatever you like.
They're all my favorites, Ricky. This is tricky. I don't want to keep you on this all day long.
I'm hanging out, man.
Okay. Well, this song right here,
Stanley and Eddie and Job still hanging out, or are they falling asleep by now?
They're still watching. They're still watching.
In bed.
By the way, I got to give a shout out to another friend of mine, Joey Goodsell, who's watching.
Oh, Joey,
good buddy of mine.
Yep. I don't think I know him, but hi. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Hi from both of us, Joey. He's saying Nick of Time is one of his favorite songs.
Okay.
I'm not actually going to play the title song, if that's all right, but I was going to play this little number. That's just, man.
It'll... Oh, yeah.
Hey, shut up. Don't lie to me. You think I'm blind, but I've got eyes to see. Hey, mister, how do you do? Oh, pardon me, I thought I knew.
Wow, man, that song. Wow.
Great, great song.
Oh, my God.
What? Who played percussion on that? Does it, I mean, I'm looking, tell me the track number, because I was looking it up to see.
Well, I can tell you, it's the great Paulinho da Costa.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I wasn't around for any of this stuff because basically, I think, you know, we cut the tracks and then, you know, they did overdub stuff later.
Okay. So he wasn't, I wondered if he was in the room.
Yeah. I mean, I would have loved it if he would have been there. I mean, it would have been a slightly different beast. But no, they overdubbed that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Joe Vitale was talking about that on a recent show where he mentioned that when Joe Lalla, the great percussionist, and him tracked together on the Crosby, Stills, and Nash stuff, that when they did it together, because like you said, it made it a special thing. It made it like a whole different vibe with them in the same room together. But
sure. I mean,
but what Pauline plays is just, God, it's just, and so those, the basic the fills that are happening are you, like the China crashes and all that. That's you.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, that's the basic. But then there's like, I was hearing like conga drums on there. And
yeah, and some timbali, little single strokes in the timbales. And but what you play, Ricky, what you play in the cross stick, you know, the side stick part, and just the feel, again, it's just, you know, I mean, it's...
I don't really remember that much about it. I think we, you know, as I say, we probably listened to the demo and then we just played it a couple of times and that was kind of it, you know.
Do you remember the demo was probably a drum machine, just to give you a reference point, most likely, or maybe?
Well,
or
I'm not exactly sure what the demo was, if they yeah, I don't remember. Honestly, don't remember.
Do you? I mean, I know,
at a certain point, I guess I could ask Bonnie. You know, I'd like to hear the demo again. I want to change my part.
Well, you can. I'll wait while you ask her. No, I'm kidding. but I know. You know, Don is he's such a great producer, and I wondered if maybe there was any influence from him or on his part to. Have you do certain things or try certain things?
Not really. Don was very hands-off. I mean, he'd just go, that's the take, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of thing. Or, you know, it wasn't heavy-handed at all like that as a producer.
Yeah. You remember, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, I mean, I guess when we were running through the song, he might say, oh, maybe it's a little slower or it should be a little faster or whatever, something like that. But it was never really that. It was just more about capturing a great vocal performance, you know, of the song. Yeah.
Boy, did you ever. I mean, and again, Bonnie just, you know, her, just such an incredible singer, you know, just an incredible singer. And I was going to ask you, I think I know the answer, wasn't done to a click track. It was just done.
I don't think any of that was done. I mean, click tracks really didn't figure into any of it. And I mean, they still don't. I think there've been a couple of records where we cut a couple of songs to a click track. And then, you know, whenever we did them live, we kind of, it just felt odd. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, to this day, we still don't use a click track. I mean, I use a metronome to look at where the tempo is. And, you know, if we decide, oh, it should be a little bit faster, you know, just bump up the metronome, look at the metronome. Mm-hmm. But it's not exactly to a click, no.
Yeah. Well, honestly, with your time, the band doesn't need a click track. I mean, that's the beauty of it, is you can, you know, you have incredible time, and but it still breathes and has that organic, natural feel to it.
I mean, I think you can do that with a click, but it certainly helps when everyone's listening to the click. I really don't like it when I'm the guy listening to the click and nobody else is. It's sort of, you know, it's difficult.
I understand. Yeah. Do you remember this is what we're doing is sort of a hybrid. I do this other show called Track Talk where we really get into specific songs, but we're kind of meshing the two together today.
Fine.
And this is great. I really appreciate this. And do you remember what the snare drum was on that? I think you told me a long time ago, but
No, because that was the thing. I mean, I was like, you know, they were, I can't remember who was doing the drums, if it was Ross Garfield or somebody else. Basically, it was a Renekit, and there was a bunch of choices of different snare drums and cymbals and stuff. I don't really remember exactly which drum was which or what. Mm-hmm. It was my own kit. I didn't really have a kit because I wasn't, you know, I was basically wandering around between New York and Australia, and I had drums and stuff in Australia, so I wasn't really moved out of Australia. I didn't have anything over here. Mm-hmm. So we had great drums from, you know, as I say, probably from Drum Doctors.
And from Ross, yeah.
I can't remember the other guy's name now who used to supply drums around there.
Probably Drum Paradise. Was it maybe Jeff Jonas, Harry McCarthy?
It wasn't Terry McCarthy. I know Terry's in Nashville. But maybe it was Drum Paradise. I can't remember the guy's name. He had a nickname. Maybe it was Jimbo. I don't know. Does that ring a bell? It's so long ago. Come on. It could be.
I know. 35 years. I know Ross loves Black Beauties, Ludwig Black Beauties. It could be any kind of snare drum. Who knows?
Yeah. My preference is definitely for wooden drums, snare drums. So I would have probably opted for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
At that point, I wasn't into metal snare drums so much. Yeah.
Yeah. Such a beautiful track, man. Yeah. It's just, I could go on and on about that, and I won't right now, but I hope everybody, if they hadn't heard that song before, go back and listen to it, because it's, to me, it's a lesson in how to play for the song. And again, we have to talk about Hutch for a second. I mean, his bass playing on that song is just otherworldly.
It's beautiful. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. To me, it seems pretty simple, but it's all about the singer. I mean, that song is really well written, and it just, you know, has a great form. And Bonnie's performance is out of this world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how nice to just be sitting there just playing simply behind a great singer like that, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful answer, but it's so humble because, I'm going to ask Santa Claus this year for Christmas to have a feel like you. It's the only thing I want from Santa Claus this year.
Okay, well, we should play together sometime. I'll come and visit your drum room.
You have to, because you might be. Now, I saw they've already advertised a date for you guys next summer at Cape Cod. And there's a sister venue literally a half mile from my house here in Cohasset called the Melody Tent.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's called the Music Circus. The one here is the Music Circus. Yeah, the Melody Tent is Cape Cod. Sorry.
The other place is also a tent?
Yes. And around. Yep.
Yeah. Wow. It's always amazing to play these places somehow. You know, you play with your eyes closed and you open up and the audience is totally different. It's like, whoa, what happened?
Yeah. I was looking at that guy a second ago. Yeah.
Yeah. It was actually that girl. What happened to that girl?
She'll be back. Well, Ricky, I won't keep you too much longer. I mentioned playing a Beach Boys song, and maybe we'll just close out with Sail on Sail, or, you know, a great, great tune that you played on.
Okay.
Blondie during that Beach Boys period from the Holland record. Yeah. And okay. I told you this would be relatively painless.
Yeah. So. No, I mean, I just sort of haven't, I mean, I just haven't done interviews in forever. And I didn't do that much Zooming during the pandemic. So I just didn't know how this stuff works. So, it is painless. It's with it you, man.
Thank you. I so appreciate it.
That makes a big difference. We're all mates.
We sure are. And
so this is Sail on Sailor, huh?
This is Sail on Sailor from, I think, 72, 3, 2?
Somewhere in there. We'd already recorded the album Holland in Holland, and then there wasn't a single. So this was cut because the record company was saying we need something that sounds more like a single. And so we went into Village Record and cut this. And I think it's another one of those where it was just maybe like the first take or something.
It's a great track.
Nailed it. Yeah.
And you're singing backup as well on this. You're singing.
I don't think I sang on this one. No.
Okay.
I do remember I did not sing on it because Brian actually came down. So I'm not sure who all was there, but I think Jerry Beckley from America was in it, and Billy Hinchy sadly passed on, and Carl, and I think I'm not sure who else. But it was really nice to see Brian in the studio arranging the background vocals.
Yeah.
Man, he's a master, you know.
Sure is, yeah. Well, here it comes. Sail on Sailor, Beach Boys.
Simple track. I mean, you know, I think, I mean, a lot of that stuff, it was just cut with this, like, I think Carl played piano, Blondie played bass, and I played drums. So it was like really simple, and then everything got stacked on.
Yeah.
But when I hear the drums now, it's a pretty damn simple part, but
it grooves like crazy. It's a beautiful part. And, you know, I've been listening to it a lot. My band we're talking about playing this song, and I don't know if this was even you thought about this or if anywhere near intentional, but you start the song playing almost like just like eighth notes, and then it builds to 16th notes.
I didn't hear that.
In the very beginning, the first bit where you come in and it's got that, you know, that bluesy influence kind of vibe to it, and you start with a little dun, 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 and then you come, you know, it's like it's yeah, and it really lifts it. You know, it's just it. It's.
I'll have to go back and check it out because yeah, I mean, when I'm just listening to it now over the speakers, I'm thinking, my God, it's a really, you know, straight ahead, simple thing. But I didn't really hear any of the dancing hi-hat stuff.
Yeah, you know, but and we both know that's what, you know, that's what makes a great record is just, you know, you're supporting the singer. You're like, you've been talking about Bonnie, you know, just like supporting the vocal and the, you know, the melody of the song. So it's, it's beautiful. So, yeah. And, you know, Blondie sounds amazing on it too, man. What a voice.
Yeah. I think Carl was going to be singing it, but then he said, Blondie, you should sing it, you know?
Yeah.
It was, that's how things were back in the day. It was just like, okay, you have a go, you know, it was very loose and casual. So
that's great. And before I let you go, sorry, I was just going to say, I know there was a reunion. I got in touch with you a couple of years ago. I happened to see on, I don't know what channel it was, but there was like a 50th reunion of maybe of that band. And you guys did like a concert.
I wasn't part of that. I mean, I was asked to play at something with Brian.
Well, you played Sail on Sailor on the show that I saw.
Okay. And, well, that was with Brian's band.
Okay.
It was Brian. You know, I mean, there's like different configurations of the Beach Boys now, but this was Brian's thing with the band, the Wondermints.
Okay. Okay.
And they basically, you know, filmed some show. I'm not sure that it was commemorating anything, but yeah, I went in and played on a couple of songs, including that one. And I think the song Darlin', I can't remember what else, but yeah, it was fun to be in it for, you know, a minute.
I remember
it very well because I was sick as a dog.
That's what I remember.
I went to Las Vegas and I had a terrible flu come on out of nowhere. I guess all the air conditioning or something. But anyhow, I kind of got through the gig and there it was. But it was great. It was great to see Brian. I mean, what an incredible story. I mean,
that
he, you know, be the one still out there playing music for audiences. It's an amazing story.
Sure is. It sure is. Well, that's what I remembered you telling me about that was that you had a terrible temperature flu and you'd never know it by the performance. It was perfect, you know, just as usual. Ricky, thank you so much for being here today. It's such an honor and a pleasure.
Yeah. And say hi to the guys that are still awake.
They are. They're still there. I absolutely will. Well, stay with me for 1 second. We'll end the show. I want to thank you for being here. Big hand for my friend Ricky Fattar. Thanks for watching, everybody. And we'll see you soon. All right. Well, that's my show. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, give it a like. Leave me a comment. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel if you haven't done that already. And the podcast is available on all the podcast platforms, so download it. And remember, no drummers are ever harmed on Live From My Drum Room or Track Talk. And drummers, when in doubt, leave it out. All right. Again, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And I'll see you again real soon. See ya.